Let's get together, talk about the movies that we saw this week. We'll have discussions, talk film news, we'll laugh a lot and act like geeks. Sometimes we'll have a guest or two, sometimes it's just the two of us. Let's crack some jokes and tell some folks to come along and hang with us!
Mike and Mike go to the movies. Mike and Mike go to the movies.
Yeah!
You have chosen wisely.
There's a conspiracy afoot, and it goes all the way to the top of this podcast. It's Mike and Mike Go to the Movies. I'm Mike Smith, and joining me, as always, is someone who does not give a shit because he's not a friend of Tennessee Williams.
Mike DiCiccio.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great, and I'm glad that you know that when I tried to get some friends to watch one of these movies with me, the one that you had to watch, yeah. And I told them, I asked, do you guys want to watch a movie where it goes all the way to the top? and they were like, yeah, I'm in. They didn't meet my intensity, but yes, they knew the whole time.
Yeah, it was they knew. That is what we're doing today. We're doing a Mike Makes Mike Watch, our monthly series on the podcast where I make Mike D watch something, and then he makes me watch something. Ideally, something we've never seen before. I guess we could make us watch rewatches, but that's no fun, right? We want to expose each other to new horizons.
Correct. That's reserved more for the birthday bylaw movies, where it's like, let's watch an old fave or something. Or that was the impetus behind those movies. The Mike Makes Mike Watches was the stuff that mostly you've been telling me to watch for the decade that we've known each other, and I'm like, yeah, I'll get to it. And you're like, no, for the podcast, we're doing it. So,
right.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay, fair.
Yeah, I'm trying. Yeah, I got to think about my birthday bylaw. My birthday's coming up in June.
Yes, and I'm reserving my right because Joker 2 comes out on my birthday.
Is it really on your birthday?
It's my birthday day to invoke the bylaw.
I mean,
but unless somebody wants to pay us, then like, yeah, sure, I guess I'll watch it.
I will say, I'm not sure the bylaw works in reverse. I don't think you can.
It's an additive thing, not a, yeah.
Okay. But I think it would be really fun to talk about Joker 2 on this podcast, partially because I think Joker 2 could be pretty good. I don't know.
You shut your goddamn mouth.
I think it could be a pretty good movie.
How many times do we have to teach you this lesson, old man?
I don't know. Did you watch the trailer for Joker 2, Mike? Is that a curiosity?
No, of course not.
Check it out. Looks pretty good. I mean, I think it's such a big swing from what Joker was. You know, Joker 2019 was, granted, I liked Joker more than you did.
That's a pretty low bar to hit.
Mike D, famously not a fan of the film Joker from 2019. but I think Joker is a pretty good movie. You know, much like we were just talking about this off mic, Alex Garland's Civil War. You know, that is a movie that people either really loved or really hated, and I was just somewhere in between. Like, yeah, it's fine. It's pretty good. I didn't dislike it. I enjoyed parts of it. In Civil War, kind of the same thing. Joker, I think, is like a fairly hollow, you know, reimagining of Martin Scorsese movies like Taxi Driver and King of Comedy, right?
Right.
And Joker Folies à Deux is going to be this like big swing romantic musical that seems more heavily influenced by New York, New York than anything else. And also like the Umbrellas of Cherbourg gets like a specific shout out in the trailer. Like there's one shot that like pays homage to that. And I don't know. It just seems like such a wild turn for like the sequel to Joker to be.
Right.
And you know, I don't really like Todd Phillips all that much as a filmmaker. I do think Joaquin Phoenix was good in Joker. And in general, I think he's one of our best actors. And Lady Gaga is playing Harley Quinn. I don't know. I'm in. There's... I think there's something going on in Joker Folies à Deux.
Maybe Lucy will keep the ball there this time, you know? Maybe this time it'll be different.
Speaking of, man, still gotta watch Rebel Moon, man. Still gotta get around.
Yeah, exactly. Come on.
Still gotta get around to it. I do think Joker Folies à Deux could be good. And I think we should talk about it when it comes out. Doesn't have to be on your birthday, Mike. We could do it a week later.
You could do it a different week. Okay. Maybe. I'll give you a possible maybe.
Okay. But if anybody wants to, really kind of put their weight on the scale, if they want to donate $50 to the podcast and make us watch Joker 2.
Can't say no.
That's a thing.
That's the rules.
Ko-fi donation, $50 right there. And the more 50s you donate, the more times Mike D has to watch Joker 2. Just for, my God. For every $50, we're going to make Mike DiCrescio watch Joker 2 one more time.
I'm glad that the trailer did not. I also saw Civil War this past weekend.
Okay.
And same, you know, down the line. It's pretty good. It's down the middle. Like, it's fine. It looks amazing. I think there's really great performances, but ultimately, kind of hollow. But I'm glad the trailer didn't play before that, but the trailer for Maxine did, because they also A24.
Yeah.
The movies are back, baby. That's all I gotta say. Make sure you watch Angel, which was a Mike Makes Mike watch, before you watch Maxine, because it feels like they're just one and the same. They're gonna be referencing the same stuff.
I think you are correct, and that Maxine trailer does look really fun. I'm very excited about that. Also, the Long Legs trailer looks really cool. There's a lot of cool stuff coming out.
A lot of cool shit happening.
Yeah, a lot of cool stuff. Long Legs, which of course we'll talk about on The Complete Works, because Nicolas Cage is in it. And then, yeah, Furiosa is out next month also, which that's all I'm thinking about. I can't wait. There's this one moment, and you've seen the Furious trailer by now, I'm sure, right, Mike?
Actually, I don't think I have. I don't think it played before Civil War or First Omen, yeah.
Wow, okay. Yeah, Furiosa has had two trailers now. The first trailer is pretty good, but the second trailer, I think, rocks. And there's this one moment in the trailer where Anya Taylor-Joy is, like, narrating it, like, as Furiosa, like, you know, doing the voiceover and stuff. And there's this one moment where she has this, like, guttural sound to her voice about, like, wanting her family back. And she has this line, like, "I want them back." And then there's a pause. "I want them back." And she's like, takes the lever of the vehicle and starts it just looks so fucking rad. looks cool. I can't wait. Furiosa, we will definitely be talking about on this podcast, I think.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes. Sure.
That's got to happen.
That will do for free.
Yeah. If we review only two new movies this year, it's going to be Furiosa and Joker.
My God.
Anyway, today we're not talking about any new movies, Mike.
That's right.
In fact, both movies that we're talking about are at least 10 years old at this point. And so today, Mike D, you're making me watch Alan J. Pakula's The Pelican Brief from 1993. And I am making you watch Noah Baumbach's Mistress America from 2015. And so, yeah, which one of these movies would you like to talk about first, Mike?
Let's talk about Mistress America first.
Okay, let's do it. Let's get into Mike Makes Mike Watch.
I hope they choose right. Mike's watching Mike's movie. Picked for him specially. Whoa, it's just another night. Mike's watching Mike's movie. They vary in quality.
I was sleeping. Turn that off.
Sorry.
I'm your roommate. You know the feeling of being at a party where you don't know anybody? College is like that the whole time.
You should call Brooke.
I hear she's fun.
Baby Tracy.
Being around Brooke made you want to find life, not hide from it.
I'm going to shorten that, punch it up, and turn it into a tweet.
She sang with the band and knew everyone and didn't owe anyone anything and couldn't pay up even if she did.
High five, sister. That was an amazing night.
Best of my life.
You got a honey?
No. There's just one guy.
Hey.
Hey.
But he's got a girlfriend.
There's no cheating when you're 18. You should all be touching each other all the time.
I'm starting a restaurant.
The front part would be like a shop. We'd also have cooking classes. Maybe cut hair.
If I did a cabaret, it would be called High Standards, and I would sing all the standards.
That's clever.
I tutored junior high, but I would love to get into the app business.
I freelance as an interior decorator.
I want to write short stories.
Oh, me too. Not short stories, though.
I think I'm sick, and I don't know if my ailment has a name. I just am in love with everything, but can't figure out how to make myself work in the world.
I think I have that too. I am so impressed by you and so worried for you at the same time.
Sometimes I don't know if you're a Zen master or a sociopath. I'm just normal.
All right, that was from the trailer for Mistress America, directed by Noah Baumbach from 2015, starring Greta Gerwig in the sort of lead role. I guess technically the other character, Lola Kirk, is the lead of the movie, but they're, co-leads, I would say. They're pretty equal in the film. So yeah, I think, weirdly, I didn't intend for this to happen, but over the course of Mike Makes Mike Watch, I think I've been like slowly filling in Greta Gerwig's entire filmography.
Yes.
For Mike DiCrescio, who, like, this time last year, I don't think you had seen, like, any of her movies, right?
Yeah. No, correct. I hadn't seen anything. And you've so far made me watch Lady Bird, Frances Ha, and now Mistress America.
Right. And so Frances Ha, Mistress America, both directed by Noah Baumbach, but co-written by Noah Baumbach and Greta Gerwig. And, you know, counts like, they're married. They work together. I'm pretty sure she's, like, sort of co-director on these movies, too. Yeah. But credited to Noah Baumbach. But, yeah. So Frances Ha is, I think, the most recent one that I made you watch before this.
Yes.
And I think you had a similar reaction to Frances Ha and Lady Bird, where you're kind of like, yeah, I like this. This is pretty good. I'm not sure I like this as much as everybody else does. Right.
Correct. And also to preview, same for Mistress America, which is wild. But I've come to realize I'm going to have to go back and rewatch Lady Bird now because of this. I rewatched Frances Ha this past weekend.
Okay.
Thanks to a certain film critic who writes or used to write all of their things in the character of a Marvel, in character as a Marvel.
Film Crit Hulk,
yes. Who sometimes randomly streams on Twitch unannounced, untitled movie marathons. Which is like, you know, I don't know. There's some kind of copyright dodging that they're doing over there to make that happen. But I saw that they were streaming on, I think it was on Saturday or something this past weekend. And I was just like, this is cool. I checked in and I forget what movie it was. Maybe I think it was Casablanca or something. And I was like, this rules, but I have to go do some stuff.
Yeah.
So I left. I think it was D&D actually. I went to play D&D. D&D ended. My friends and I were hanging out on Discord. We didn't know what to do. I was like, well, this is guy. Let's see what Film Crit Hulk streaming.
Yeah.
Popped it on. It was the opening credits of Frances Ha. I was like, well, okay. We got nothing else to do. Let's watch this. And was totally won over by it. Was just
really?
Like, oh my God, this is incredible. But it was funny. My friends that I was watching it had never seen it. And they were where I was the first time I watched it, where they were like, I fucking hate Frances. What is she doing? And I was like, just wait. Just trust me. Like, you know, I remember there being a moment in the back half of the movie that like really won me over. And then Frances Ha, it's basically after Paris, after she goes to Paris, just because she lies that she has plans to go to Paris. And it's like this whole awful thing. And
yeah.
And then she spends this summer at Vassar College, right? Like in the dorms. And after that, the back half of the movie or like the third act or whatever, I was like totally on board for Frances. So knowing that's coming, I was able to enjoy the first half of the movie a lot more. And then the same thing happened with my friends that like, when we got to that point, they were like, oh no, Frances, you poor sweet child. Like, you know, so all that to say, I really enjoyed Frances Ha. And then when I was watching Mistress America, I was like, I hate this character. I cannot handle it. And then there's a moment in the back half of the movie where it turns and I'm like, I fucking love this character. Like, so now I got to go back and rewatch Mistress America with that knowledge. And I got to go back and watch Lady Bird and be like, maybe there's just a barrier to entry for me with these, you know, like Arrested Development, annoying, precocious people.
Yeah.
That thaw out throughout the first act, the first half of the movie, and then by the third act, you're completely on their side for me. and that makes it more enjoyable. So I've had a journey with Noah Baumbach and Greta Gerwig's movies in the past 3 days.
Yeah. that's so great. I'm glad you got the chance to rewatch Frances Ha and you kind of came around on it. That's great. I think we like threw out there as a possibility when we talked about Frances Ha.
Yes.
That like when you watched it again at some point. But like I figured if you watched it again, it would be like years from now. Like it would be like
more than a couple months. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm glad you ended up rewatching Frances Ha, and I hope that you end up rewatching Mistress America because this is my favorite Noah Baumbach movie. This is probably my favorite Greta Gerwig movie. I really love Mistress America. This is like the one that I really, really responded to. And I mean, Frances Ha was probably a grower on me as well. Like I saw Frances Ha when it was in theaters, liked it quite a bit, didn't really think about it too much for like 10 years. And then, you know, finally watched it again and really loved it. Mistress America, I watched, I didn't see it in theaters, but I saw it like when it hit Blu-ray, I think. Like you know, back in my Netflix disc plan, which RIP, missed that so much.
In the ancient past.
Yeah. I watched Mistress America off my Netflix disc plan when it came out. And I was like completely won over by it immediately. I loved this movie. I was like, it was a full like 4.5, 5 stars for me. Like I was so in for Mistress America. And I think part of that is the turn it takes about halfway through, where the first half of it is, you know, it's heightened. There's like a lot of like wacky dialogue and stuff. And you're kind of just seeing this sort of like larger than life character that Greta Gerwig is playing a little bit. Just like what a wild, weird person to be around. And like, she's a little bit insufferable, but like, why is she this way? And all that stuff. And then the back half turns into like just a really fun screwball comedy.
Yes.
And I was just so enchanted by it. I was so delighted by this movie when I first saw it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's that's the same thing for me where I was watching it. And it's kind of like the first half of the movie, Greta Gerwig is basically playing like Frances if she could make Rent, right? Like she's the same kind of character who's just like getting in over her head, saying yes to stuff and like doing all these things, like, you know, trying to open a restaurant that's also a barbershop, that's also a community, whatever, I don't know, all this stuff. Moms, right? That's the name of the place she's trying to open.
Right.
And she's the soon-to-be stepsister of the main character who is this like literature or English major writing something student at like Baruch College and all this stuff. And I don't know if it's also my reaction to the first half of both Frances Ha and Mistress America is that it's like too much of a mirror of me and my friend groups at the like when we were 21 and 22 and were English majors.
The movie's cut close. It's cut real close.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't know if I like this. So there's that's definitely a possibility to my initial like recoiling from these movies. But yeah, and then they go to this like psychic who's like, you gotta heal an old wound or something. He just is throwing out stuff, and they're like, we have to go to Greenwich and ask our old friend, or ask your old friend that stole your t-shirt idea or whatever, ask them for money. And yeah, once they get to the house in Greenwich, it's just like 30 or 45 minutes straight of screwball comedy with like five or six levels of diet conversations going on at the same time in the same room. And it's fucking hilarious. Yeah. And I was like totally won over by all that. And it reveals this kind of like, you know, deeper, I don't even know what the right word is right now. I can't think of it, but this deeper level to these characters that is beyond just like insufferable and makes bad choices. And it's like, oh wait, you're a real person. Like you're a real character behind all this.
Right.
The introspection or whatever. And yeah, it's just, it wins me. It won me over. Like I was like on board with this, this crew, Greta Gerwig and her 18-year-old posse. It's like, you know, four or five 18-year-olds that are with her just as emotional support. And the way they all turn on the main character when it's discovered that she's written a story based on what they're going through and all this stuff is so funny. So I had a journey, ups and downs, emotional roller coaster.
Nice. Yeah, I think one of my favorite things about this movie, so I've seen this movie a couple of times now because I saw it like when it came out, and one of my favorite Blu-ray purchases ever was I was at the dollar store and I found Mistress America on Blu-ray, and I was like, snatch, like that's
got it.
got that. So now I have it. I got it for $1 and I've watched it like I think once or twice since then. I showed it to my girlfriend and I think she liked it, but wasn't like crazy about it as into it as I was. She really likes Frances Ha, and for whatever reason didn't connect with this one as much. But yeah, I really, really liked this movie. And I think part of it is because, you know, Frances Ha is very much about like, you know, navigating your 20s and like kind of having that, like, you know, you're out of college, you're expected to be an adult, but you're not quite sure how that works. And you're kind of just figuring it out.
Constantly asking people, do I look old?
Right.
I'm only 27. That's not that old.
And Mistress America, I think, you know, you have that college perspective, but then you also have the perspective of somebody who is in their 30s at this point. Yeah. But like somebody who's in their 30s, but still very much feels like they are in college. They're trying to project an image of like what they expect a 30-year-old person to look like based on what they thought they should be when they were in college. And so to that end, like Greta Gerwig lives in Times Square.
And says like, this is the first place I got off. Like when I got off the bus into New York, this is where I was. And I thought it's where cool people lived. Just, like, nobody would think. I mean, even right down to her introduction is like coming down those like red steps in the middle of Times Square. But for so much longer, like she's like calls out when she's at the top of the stairs. And it's like a good 20 seconds of her.
Yes.
Like arms out, like reaching for a hug, but for 20 seconds because the stairs are so long. Hilarious. Very funny.
Yeah. And so you have, you know, this kind of insane-ish person that sort of like takes everyone and kind of brings them into her own like, you know, whirlwind of emotions and like, you know, whole everything that's going on. And then you also have Lola Kirk's character, who is a fairly down to earth college student, but is like, you know, kind of enraptured in this new character. But she also, I think, realizes like how insane she is.
Yeah.
And so very early on, she's like, oh, this is great material for my book that I'm going to write.
Right. This short story that I'm going to submit to the literature society or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I love that they keep bringing up like, you printed this on onion skin? Like they keep It's such a superficial thing to do. I don't know. It's just very funny. And yeah, the way that she gets wrapped up in the frenzy of Greta Gerwig's character, who to a college student looks like has it all together, right? Like she's opening a business. She's living in commercial space, like all, you know, whatever, all this stuff, all for it to just come all collapsing down when the rich boyfriend pulls out or breaks out with her or whatever. I forget exactly what happens, right?
Right. Yeah.
To be like, oh, she, none of this is, she has got no plan. She's just seat of her pants is faking all of it.
Right. But she like is so good at faking all of it. And is like, you know, is very confident in how she speaks. And that sort of fools everybody into being like, yeah, she's kind of got it together, even though she seems insane. You know, and there's just moments, there's very quotable moments that come out of her character. I think Brooke's her character's name.
Yes.
But yeah, there's this one like line that I think about all the time, which is like, she's talking to somebody and she's like, oh, that's very like self-aware of you. And she's like, oh yeah, I know everything about myself. That's why I can't do therapy.
Or when she asks the other character, Lola Kirk's character, I forget her name, is like, oh, I'm an autodidact. Do you know what that means? And she says, yes. And she's like, that word is one of the things I self-taught myself. It's so funny. It's so great. And then they go to Greenwich, right? Like I said, on the advice of some psychic, the spirit, that, you know, he gives them that vague thing and they fill it all in themselves, to go to Mamie Claire, who's her Brooke's ex best friend that stole her t-shirt idea and her fiance in the past.
And her cats.
And her cats. That's a great reveal. That's fucking hilarious. So they go there and to ask them for money to fill in the gap in their investment gap now that the new rich boyfriend has left. And then it just becomes a madcap screwball comedy where it's all these different couples and relationships and all this stuff. And the person that's like a tax attorney pretending to be a, like a copyright lawyer or whatever is going on. Very fun.
Yeah. And it's like it's them and also like two other college kids that go over to...
Because he's got a car.
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, he's the one with the car, and like his girlfriend is like has severe like abandonment issues or whatever it is. Like she's like just very, very, very clingy and very attached to him. And like, anytime like another girl is in the car, she gets threatened by it.
when Lola Kirk calls the guy, the boyfriend, the like not boyfriend, I don't know, the her classmate to ask about like if you were gonna get like a nice pasta, like what kind of pasta would you get? And the like traumatized girlfriend in bed with him is like, well, yeah, when she's stick pasta up her pussy or something. Like it's just the fun, like she's so insecure about it. It's so funny.
Yeah, and they all go out to Greenwich together.
Incorrect.
And so that dynamic is very, very funny because there is like, I think Tracy does have like a crush on this guy, right? Or like she's
he was like, they like sort of had a thing, but not any kind of physical thing, but she assumed they were going to be a couple. And when he doesn't show interest and goes to this other girlfriend, she's like personally slighted by it. And so she's sort of like to prove to herself that he liked her is like kind of coming on to him.
Right. Yeah. And so they all like that. That's all happening when they get to Greenwich. And like, yeah, there's all this stuff with Mamie Claire. And they're like, she's like, you know, Brooke confronting her and then also her husband, who was like her ex-lover and all this stuff. And like it all kind of builds up to like her pitching an idea to them, like a sales pitch.
Yeah. And it's just totally unprepared. Yeah. Can't do a pitch. And she gets saved by her stepsister, although revealed to not be stepsister. And that's sort of like what ruins it all for Brooke, right? Her dad calls her while they're in Greenwich.
Oh, right. And they're not getting married after all.
The wedding's off. Yeah. So I guess she's just nothing to you now. Like they're not soon to be stepsisters. And then that all kind of boils over in the reveal that she's written a short story about Brooke called Mistress America. And it all goes wrong. They all start screaming at each other, like put her on trial. And it sort of becomes like a Wes Anderson thing for a sec, where it's just like really specific blocking and everyone's framed perfectly and like right in the center and they're all lined up.
Which Noah Baumbach did work with Wes Anderson a bunch.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I think he co-wrote Fantastic Mr. Fox, and he also co-wrote Life Aquatic.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it just becomes like a really, like stage bound. They're in a single location, right? It feels like, and then all of a sudden they're in a specific room where they're sort of like putting her on trial, basically. And there's a really funny cutaway moment where they're like all reading the short story and Brooke goes to turn the page and everyone else is like, whoa, slow down. She's reading too fast for them because they're all reading over each other's shoulder. And maybe Claire's like, I just have three questions to ask you. Do you believe in a woman's right to choose? Just like all these like really crazy highfalutin questions based off this short story.
Yes.
Great. Good stuff.
Yeah. Good stuff. This has made me really want to rewatch Mistress America. It's been a couple of years, I think.
Do it. It's fun.
Yeah, it's fun. It's great. I'm glad you see, I don't know. It sounds like once you watch it again, you're going to be much more into this movie.
Yes. Yeah. I think really watching, like I said, rewatching Frances Ha, like made me realize like, oh shit. Okay. This is how I react to Noah Baumbach and specifically these Greta Gerwig movies, I guess.
Yeah.
And then as I'm watching Mistress America in the first half, like I'm feeling and thinking the same things that I was thinking during Frances Ha. So I'm like, okay, well, experience tells me when I rewatch this, I'm going to really enjoy this or enjoy that first half. The Greenwich part was great. Like on the first watch.
Yeah.
Had a lot of fun with that stuff. It was just the,
yeah, it's the build to that really. It's have to kind of get through the first half, which, you know, establishes all the characters, establishes all the dynamics, establishes the conflicts and what's going on. And then really, I mean, the Greenwich half adds like five more characters that you've only heard about.
Exactly. Yeah. But just the whole like insufferable, self-important, I'm smarter than everybody else English student thing.
Right.
It's too close to home.
Yeah. I think that's what's so funny about the movie to me too, is that, you know, it's like, they're both like that. Like they are both like very like self-aggrandizing and like, assuming they know better than everyone around them.
Wearing a beret. Yeah. Like all that kind of shit.
It's great.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, loved it. Any other thoughts about Mistress America, Mike, before we move on into the other movie?
Not that I could think of right now. I'm glad you made me watch it. I probably never would have really gotten around to these, you know, that this like genre, mumblecore, air quote, whatever you want to call it. I don't know, this kind of small indie dramedy thing from the 2010s, I guess, you know, there's a lot of them.
Fair enough.
Is a genre that or like, you know, subset of movies or whatever that I enjoy mostly, but don't really feel the like desire or pull to like make sure I see them, you know? So I'm glad that you're using the Mike Makes Mike Watch opportunity to force me to see some of them.
Yeah. I'm not even sure I would call this like a mumblecore kind of movie. I mean, Frances Ha more so, but even that, like, it's, you know, Greta Gerwig, like I know about Mike, we're both like, you know, key members of the mumblecore movement. But I think at this point they kind of moved beyond it. But I think this is a movie, like of all the Greta Gerwig, Noah Baumbach movies, this is the one that I feel like people more need to see. You know, I mean, you know, the Gerwig movies, Lady Bird, Little Women, Barbie, obviously, they're big. Yeah. They're huge. Everybody saw those. And Frances Ha, you know, has always been like pretty well-liked, well-received, and, you know, it has Criterion disc and like it's discussed often, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like Mistress America is the forgotten one. It kind of came and went without a trace, like didn't really get too much of a theatrical release. And, you know, it's the one that I think is the best. It's so good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I liked it. Not quite like that, but I liked it so far.
I'm glad. I think once you watch it again, it's going to be a full 5 stars from,
it's going to be my whole personality.
Yeah, exactly. That is Mistress America, the Noah Baumbach, Greta Gerwig film. And now let's move on into the movie that you made me watch this week, Mike, which is The Pelican Brief.
From the best-selling thriller by John Grisham, author of The Firm and The Client, from Alan J. Pakula, director of All the President's Men and Presumed Innocent, Julia Roberts, Denzel Washington, the Supreme Court of the United States, our ultimate symbol of law and order. But in a single night, two of its justices will be brutally assassinated. 1,000 miles away in New Orleans, a lone law student has pieced together who did the killings and why, and created a document that has become known in the corridors of power as the Pelican Brief. Now, she has become a target, and the only person she can trust is an investigative journalist.
Everyone I've told about the brief is dead.
If this thing reaches as deep and goes as high as we think it does, these men will do anything not to be exposed.
Julia Roberts, Denzel Washington, The Pelican Brief.
All right, that was from the trailer from The Pelican Brief from 1993, directed by Alan J. Pakula and starring Julia Roberts and Denzel Washington, among others. I did like, one of my favorite things that happens, this often happens with Mike Makes Mike Watch movies, I feel like, is when the opening credits start rolling. And I don't know who else is in the movie.
Yeah.
I don't know who else is in the movie, and I'm suddenly like, okay, oh yeah, Denzel Washington, there he is. Julia Roberts. Oh, Sam Shepard's in this movie. John Hurd, Stanley Tucci, John Lithgow. Just like. So that was fun. I enjoyed that aspect of it. But why The Pelican Brief, right, Mike? Why did you want to make me watch this movie?
Well, I watched this movie for the first time like 6-ish months ago, maybe.
And you talked about it in a discussions episode, I think, on the podcast.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And I really enjoyed it. I had a total blast. And it was I think I saw it because it was on a John Grisham episode of Screen Drafts, is where they talked about it. And I had heard The Pelican Brief, like the title, had never seen it. Didn't really know anything about it. So when they discussed it on that movie, and they're like, oh, it's a kind of, you know, conspiracy thriller from the guy who sort of made that genre, right? Like Pakula, right. With 3 Days of the Condor and Parallax View and Clute, I think, is the like paranoia trilogy or something, right?
Correct. Yeah.
So yeah,
which, Clute coming up on the Roy Scheider podcast.
On the Roy Scheider. I'm gonna retroactively pretend that I planned that. Yeah. Where it's like, oh, right as we're coming up to start recording the episode for Clute,
yep,
we're gonna watch a Alan J. Pakula film. It's gonna be great, even though I picked this in January before Roy Scheider had even been selected as a twinkle in our eyes. But yeah, and just a movie, Denzel Washington and Julia Roberts, just like, I don't know, this feels like the, you know, one of those, we used to have movies, never forget what they took from us, we don't get movies like this anymore, kind of movies.
Yeah.
And I really loved it, and I thought you would love it, and so here it is on Mike. All right. And Mike.
Well, I will say, unfortunately, Mike, I didn't love it.
So here's the thing, I rewatched it, I don't know if I love it either.
Really?
It's a little long,
It's really long.
It's really long.
Pelican Brief. More like The Pelican, 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's maybe the thing. I think I was so enamored with, we don't have these anymore, the right. First time I watched it. And then I watched it again, and I was like, oh, maybe we should have cut this down a little.
Yeah. That's it. I did enjoy it. I didn't dislike the movie. I had a fine time with it. You know, I enjoyed the film. I'm glad you made me watch it. You know, it's a Denzel Julia Roberts that I hadn't seen before. And I think my biggest takeaway from this movie is not necessarily, I mean, yes, it's cool that, like, you know, this movie exists and we don't really make a lot of movies like this anymore. That's great. But like, we also don't have movie stars anymore.
That's a hunt. So true.
And that's what really powers The Pelican Brief, is you got Denzel Washington and you got Julia Roberts doing their thing.
You know what else?
And they're both terrific in it.
They're both great. We don't have movie stars, and sort of like what you were talking about before, we also don't have 100 character actors. Everyone else in this movie is like, oh shit, it's that guy. Even if you don't know their name. There's so many of them in this movie. Like, John Lithgow shows up for 10 minutes, and the other lawyers that I can't remember anybody's name. The guy Garcia, like the informant guy that he works for, that is on the phone with Denzel at the end, where he's like, "Well, you're gonna sue you till Sunday. You're gonna own the Washington Post by the end of this movie." The thing.
It's Jake Weber is the actor's name.
That guy, he's in everything. Like, it's just a bunch of dudes.
He's the dude from Dawn of the Dead.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's all coming together.
Anyway. We need more movie stars. We need more great character actors. I mean, we did have, you know, we had Oppenheimer last year, which we talked about pretty extensively. That's a big that guy movie.
It's been 20 years since we've had so many that guys in a movie as The Pelican Brief. 30 years.
Yeah, and it's different. Like, it feels different than, like, you know, like Wes Anderson movies often have like a huge ensemble of characters. But
yeah,
I think those feel different because usually it's the same actors that are movie to movie, and also they're usually like fairly big people. Like,
usually A-list people showing up in the ensemble in a Wes Anderson movie.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, you got Tom Hanks in Asteroid City popping up and all that stuff. But you know, Oppenheimer was true. Like, oh hey, here's Josh Hartnett. Here's you know, all these like.
Krumholtz.
Yeah, David Krumholtz and Rami Malek's in here, and you know, we didn't want him, but everybody else is the recurring hatred of Rami Malek continues on this podcast.
Enemy of the pod.
But yeah, Pelican Brief has that aspect of it, and a lot of the movies that you've made me watch, like Crimson Tide, like for example, is another one of those movies which is like, oh yeah, here's a bunch of great actors just popping up for, you know, bit parts here and there, which is very fun to see. But yeah, I enjoyed The Pelican Brief. I thought it was solid enough, but yeah, it does feel very long, and I think a lot of it is because, man, most like it is about a conspiracy that goes all the way to the top, and that is inherently exciting. That's, you know, one of those things like, oh yeah. And I think the premise of the movie starts off great. You got these two Supreme Court justices. They're both killed by an assassin. I'm in. It's great.
This is awesome.
Sounds great. And Julia Roberts like kind of figures out, like writes a legal brief, like her theory on why they were killed. And turns out she got too close to the truth.
And I love the accidental nature by which that gets turned into something official, right? She gives it, once she's having an affair with her law professor, who's great, who is friends with a guy who's like a chief counsel in the FBI. And he's just like, man, isn't this funny? Look at this thing my girlfriend wrote. And he's like, oh, interesting. And like, and then that's how the brief gets on the radar, right? And everyone, and that's how they know that she got too close.
Yes. And then, you know, how many times can you hear the phrase the Pelican Brief in a single movie? Because
it's so funny.
Also, I assumed that the Pelican Brief was like a code for something.
That's my favorite part.
I didn't know it was actually about pelicans.
It's literally about pelicans. I love the kind of control of that, like that knowledge in the, like within the movie, I think is really interesting of like what exactly the Pelican Brief is and says and claims that has everyone so panicked.
Yeah.
And I think one of the other very interesting things about watching this movie in 2024 is that it opens with massive protests in front of the Supreme Court, like on the steps. And it is all literally the exact same shit that everybody is protesting now. And it is the most depressing thing I've ever seen in a movie.
I will say yes, that, but also it's not an organized protest. It is the most, like, nobody's protesting against one thing.
No.
This is like... This is a protest where it's like, oh yeah, here's a protest sign about abortion right next to them. Here's a protest sign about gun control right next. Like, it's all about different things that they're protesting.
Gay rights, like AIDS crisis, like literally every, like, oh my fucking God. man. I was watching it with some friends that we were like, remember when the idea that it went all the way to the top might be scandalous? Like,
and now we're just assuming, like, oh yeah, everything goes all the way to the top.
It just does. like we just know that it did.
Yes.
We're just meant to keep sending emails at work, which is crazy to think about. So yeah, I mean, it was just very funny watching this movie, and it pans over that crowd and it's like, oh, and there's Greenpeace and like Save the World, like it's like environmental thing.
Yep.
It's everything's the exact same. And the idea that it's all about like illicit campaign contributions and like all this is just like sitting there like pulling your hair out. Like, no, people used to care about this thing. I don't understand.
Yeah. Now, doesn't what happens to the president at the end of this movie? He like he's going down, right? Like,
yeah, the brief is it comes out. He's not running for re-election.
Right.
You know, people had shame.
That's the thing. If
they would resign.
If the exact plot of the Pelican Brief happened in real life today, which I think it did.
Yeah. We're living through it right now. Yeah.
It wouldn't go down that way. The president would just be like, nope, that didn't happen. And then just continue on.
Fake news. And it doesn't really matter. We saw what happens when journalism doesn't care or people don't care about I don't know how to, we don't need to get a civil war. I was so blown away the first time just because it is like, you know, a pretty intense political conspiracy thriller thing. But it was kind of long, so I don't know.
It's I ended up watching this. I think I started it at like midnight. So I finished it at about 2:30. I did not check the runtime beforehand, and I should have, but in my head I was like, this has got to be under 2 hours.
It's got to be 90 minutes, right? Come on.
And yeah, it's just simply not. And the thing is, there's some great sequences in the movie. I think the car explosion sequence is really great. The scene of the parking garage is really terrific, where they're being chased. A lot of cool stuff like that. But like 80% of the movie is mostly people like in rooms, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but I think in this movie it feels a little dull. It feels a little dry. You know?
Yeah. There's something about, also Cynthia Nixon's in the beginning of this movie. That's cool. But yeah, there's something about this movie that it sort of has the things that are usually very taut and exciting, like people going through, you know, like the stacks in a library or like microfiche or whatever, you know, like they're doing that stuff. But maybe there's just too much in between those moments that are very exciting. I can't even really point to like a specifically boring section or anything. It's just a lot going on because it's a very sprawling conspiracy, I guess.
Right.
You know?
And Alan J. Pecula, great filmmaker. You know, he, like you said, he did the Paranoia trilogy. It was Klute, Parallax View, All the President's Men. These are like three all-timer 70s thriller movies, right? Like these are big. And yeah, he worked on other films. I think Sophie's Choice was also one of his movies. But The Pelican Brief was one of his last films. Like this is one of his final films. And yeah, to that end, I think he does a very effective job at staging certain sequences that are like really intense and really cool. But I think there's, you know, less care given perhaps to some other sequences that are like, oh, this feels flabby. I don't know. This feels like it could have been cut down.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy too in a movie to have with Denzel Washington and Julia Roberts for like the first hour, they're an A and B plot to each other. Like they don't meet.
They don't meet up until about halfway through the movie. Yeah.
Yeah. It takes a real long time before they finally meet and discuss what the Pelican Brief is. He's like doing a totally other journalism. It's got nothing to do with this until Julia Roberts' character calls him and is like, do you want to be in this movie? Yeah. It's like, do you want to be involved in this plot? And then from there, they're great together. It's incredible, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. They're really fun together. And they're both great individually. Like this is a very young Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
And this is like Julia Roberts at the height of her fame too. This is like post Pretty Woman. And so, yeah, it's Denzel Washington. I think Malcolm X was like the year before this.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it's a super young Denzel Washington. He's killing it. He's great. Great to see him in here. I think they both play off each other really well. And I think the last few moments in the movie, which shows what happens to them afterwards, are really effective because of how charismatic they are.
Yeah.
Where Denzel Washington's on the news and they're asking him like, oh, but you know, who wrote the Pelican Brief? And he's like, I'll never say.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for him to like her to be watching, like, I don't know, what is that? Like Charlie Rose or whatever. I don't even know what it is.
Yeah.
And for him to like smile at the camera on the TV set and for her to smile at the camera in the movie and then just like fade out on her smile is like movie stars, man.
Yeah.
Like,
and to that end, yeah, this is a movie powered by its movie stars. This was the 10th highest grossing movie of 1993.
Wow. Yeah. Look at that.
Do you want to know what the other movies are, Mike?
Would love to.
Okay. I think you can guess what number one is.
Jurassic Park.
Correct. Number one.
Imagine I said that so confidently and it was wrong.
Yeah, Jurassic Park was the highest grossing movie in 1993. Also, at the time, the highest grossing movie ever. And then number two is actually a movie that we have referenced on The Complete Works because we covered one of this director's other movies.
Oh, man. I'm not going to put anything in that together.
It's a Chris Columbus movie, director of 9 months. It's not 9 months. It's not 9 months. But Mrs. Doubtfire is number two. And I think when we talked about 9 months, we were like, man, how crazy is it that Mrs. Doubtfire was the second highest grossing movie of the year?
Probably definitely did. Yeah.
You know, so it's Jurassic Park, Mrs. Doubtfire, The Fugitive is number three. Schindler's List is four, two Spielbergs. The Firm is number five, another John Grisham adaptation starring Tom Cruise. Indecent Proposal, Cliffhanger is number seven. Sleepless in Seattle is eight. Philadelphia is nine. And The Pelican Brief is 10.
We used to be a society. It's all, you know, a lot of those are adaptations and stuff, but like,
I mean, really, you know, two of them are, right?
It's,
Jurassic Park is a book adaptation that became a huge franchise, but it wasn't at the time.
Well,
right?
The Firm and also Pelican Brief or John Grisham novels.
Yeah. I guess the book adaptation, sure. But I was thinking Jurassic Park and The Fugitive, the two like traditional like blockbuster type things here. Cliffhanger also, but that's an original concept.
Yeah.
Also, it's the best movie ever made.
Did you ever see, you've seen Ace Ventura 2, right?
I think we talked about this.
We've done this before, yeah.
Because was Cliffhanger and Mike Makes Mike Watch? Did you make me watch this for the podcast?
No, I made you watch Vertical Limit.
You definitely did that too. I mean, I watched, you know what? I watched Cliffhanger on my own, I think.
Yeah.
And then I talked about it on the podcast. And then I screened it as part of Inferno of Danger at the Roxy, which was a great time. I recommend watching Cliffhanger any time of the year. It's a good time.
Double Lithgow in the top 10? Good for him?
Yeah, big year for John Lithgow. Double Lithgow, double Spielberg. Yeah, absolutely.
But double Grishams. That's crazy.
Double Grishams. Yeah. Yeah. I guess if you want to consider John Grisham a franchise, the Firm and the Pelican Brief.
So many of his movie, or so many of his books rather, have become movies, just like Crichton. Like it's
absolutely. They're, but I think these are kind of the two big ones, right? The Firm and the Pelican Brief.
Yeah, I think so. That I can think of off the top of my head that, like, I know these are Grisham,
right?
Like, without having to be like, oh, this is a John Grisham book. But I know a lot of his books have become movies.
Right. Or I think, actually, I believe we'll be talking about one of them later, Mike.
Really?
If I have this correct, I have to double check my
Ghost wrote
my
Joker Falia Dew from the past. He's dead, right? I don't even know.
John Grisham? I have no idea. Is John Grisham dead? No, John Grisham is very much alive. He's 69 years old. Come on.
Come on. I know Michael Crichton's dead.
Michael Crichton's dead, yes.
Okay.
Roy Scheider is in Francis Ford Coppola's The Rainmaker, which is a John Grisham adaptation.
Look at that.
So yeah, we'll be talking more Grisham in the future. But yeah, The Client is a John Grisham movie. The Runaway Jury, Skipping Christmas. So that's that. Christmas with the Cranks? Well, that can't be. Skipping Christmas became the movie Christmas with the Cranks.
The secret John Grisham adaptation.
I believe, according to Wikipedia, Christmas with the Cranks is the last John Grisham movie.
Wild. Good for him, I guess.
I mean, there could always be more down the line, but
there was
a miniseries based on The Innocent Man in 2018. So there was that. But yeah, the John Grisham things have to go to TV now. They have to become miniseries.
That's right.
We can't just make The Pelican Brief anymore. We got to do other things.
We can't just do another talented Mr. Ripley movie. We got to make Ripley, the Netflix. Although I heard that rips.
I have heard that's very good. Yes.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch that. It's fun. It's fun that I accidentally picked a movie that has repercussions to two Reich Scheider projects.
Yes. What was the other one again?
Clute, Alan J. Pakula, and Rainmaker.
Yeah, there you go. So more stuff coming down that is going to be related to Pelican Brief for sure. Other scenes, so you rewatched this. I mean, other scenes that stand out to you, Mike, about Pelican Brief in this that we should talk about?
I mean, Stanley Tucci is awesome.
Yeah, he's the assassin.
He's a very convincing, but problematically Middle Eastern assassin. he's scary as hell when he puts on that fake ass blonde wig to look just like a DC guy,
yes.
You know, and he kills the Supreme Court justice. And then also the guy in the porn theater when he strangles him with the rope. That was cool.
Yes. Was that not the other?
That's the other Supreme Court justice.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
So that's fun. And and then when he kills and replaces John Hurt's character to like meet Darby,
right?
To meet Julia Roberts at the pier. But the CIA is protecting her, I think. Somebody is protecting her. I don't know. Kills him instead.
Right.
Rules. It's intense.
Yeah, that's all great stuff. Yeah, loved Stanley Tucci popping up in this. And he gets a lot of the most tense sequences in the movie, which are fun. I will say, my favorite thing about having watched The Pelican Brief is now I can go back to the episode of 30 Rock where they keep referencing The Pelican Brief.
Okay, that would be a 30 Rock episode, sure.
It's a recurring bit on an episode of 30 Rock where people keep working The Pelican Brief into conversation with the ultimate reveal being like, oh, it's been playing on Showtime a lot recently.
Amazing.
And so everybody's just been watching The Pelican Brief, but there's like a moment early in the episode where, you know, Jack is like having Kenneth like, you know, handle something discreet on the phone, and Kenneth's like, huh, I feel like I'm in The Pelican Brief. Do I already know too much?
Amazing.
So yeah, there's that. The references aren't like, they're not like hyper specific to the movie, so it's not like it's gonna be I'm gonna get more out of them, but it's just gonna be fun to be like, oh, now I've seen The Pelican Brief. I know that Julia and Denzel are in the movie.
So now you can work the 30 Rock referencing Pelican Brief into your conversation the way they work Pelican Brief into the conversation in 30 Rock.
Exactly. There's many layers to this.
Yeah. You know too much.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Any other random Pelican Brief thoughts, Mike? I liked it. I had a good time with it. I'm glad you made me watch it. You know, I'm happy to cross off another Alan J. Pakula film off my list that I hadn't seen. It doesn't quite hit the heights of, his three paranoia films from the 70s. But, you know, it's him kind of playing the hits a little bit. And that's kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It did make me kind of want to watch Dark Water. Is that what it's called? The
Mark Ruffalo, Todd Haynes movie?
Yeah.
Yes.
Teflon movie, whatever it is.
Which that movie rules. That movie's great.
Yeah, that movie, I've seen that already. But I ended up watching this kind of late I don't remember. I didn't have a ton of time to watch that movie right afterwards, but another, they knew.
They knew. It
goes all the way to the top.
Yes, one of the very few that have been made in the last few years that got a theatrical release and all that kind of stuff. I don't know. What are other like good examples of like this kind of movie, Mike?
It's like Spotlight kind of. Sure. It's a journalism movie. It's less. I mean, I guess they knew all the way to the top of the church, right? It's not necessarily like a government conspiracy.
Yes. All right, I found a letterbox list that is called They Knew.
Incredible. You know what it is? Like, it is the hits, but like people being chased through a parking garage, inherently exciting.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And of course, you get that in All the President's Men and other stuff too. But yeah, it's great. Good to see. In the list, Dark Water is number one movie on the list.
Got it.
In the letterbox. Spotlight also here. Spielberg's The Post.
Yeah.
The Big Short. Vice. I don't know if Vice counts. I don't know. It's just a biopic about Dick Cheney.
Yeah, wait a second.
Fahrenheit 9/11, I guess.
Yeah,
that's a real life They Knew, but yeah.
Yeah.
Snowden with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. We talked about that movie once.
We talked about that movie. What's his name? Nicolas Cage is in it.
Nicolas Cage is in it. All the President's Men is here. Chernobyl, the TV show.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I never watched it, but I heard it was good.
Great. Good shit.
Can it make Mike's watch be a 5-hour TV show? Who's to say?
It's sort of like a 5-hour movie.
Aaron Brockovich is in here. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure if this list really like effectively captures that They Knew as much as I want
Condor?
Three Days of the Condor, definitely. I mean, all those like 70s paranoia films would probably be in there. Yeah. Good stuff.
I've told the story, 3 Days of the Condor, about the mailman's shoes in that movie. And my dad really likes that because he was a mailman. When they send the assassin dressed as a mailman.
Right. They got the shoes right.
No, the shoes are wrong.
Oh, that's the thing.
Robert Redford looks down and realizes the guy's wearing brown shoes, but mailmen are always wearing black shoes. And that's how he knows he's an assassin. And my dad, a former letter carrier, really appreciated that detail. So that's an insight into the mind of a dad.
There you go. I love that. That's fantastic. That's in 3 Days of the Condor, you said?
That's 3 Days of the Condor.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've seen that, but it's been a while.
It's when he's like staying at Faye Dunaway's apartment. She's
right.
Like, oh, you got a package you got to sign for? And he's got brown shoes on. Dead giveaway.
There you go. There it is. All right. I think we can start wrapping up this episode, Mike. I think we can call it a day.
We're talking about the colors of shoes. Don't you want to talk more about it? I think we're done.
Yes. All right. So that is The Pelican Brief and Mistress America and another Mike Makes Mike Watch completed. There it is.
We did it.
All right, Mike D, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at MD Film Blog on Twitter and Letterboxd and Blue Sky. If you'd like to donate support the show, you can do that at our Ko-fi page, which is Mike and Mike Pod. Ko-fi.com/ Mike and Mike Pods, where you can also donate $50 and pick a movie like we did last week.
Yes.
Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah. If you want to ensure that we can review Joker Filet Adieu in October.
Shit.
Donate $50. We'll make it happen.
That's right. And if you want merch, we have merch available on our Redbubble, which is mikeandmikepods.redbubble.com.
That's right. You can find me online at msmithfilmblog on Twitter, Mike Smith Film Letterbox, Radio Mike Sandwich, Instagram. Thanks so much for listening to Mike Might Go to the Movies. I'm Mike Smith. That's my Decree Show. Don't forget to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or any other podcast app. And if you want to contact us, you can tweet at us at Mike and Mike Pod for the time being. Also, we're going to be at Complete Works Pod on Twitter, WRKS, no O in the word works, or like Mike D said, Mike and Mike Pods on Blue Sky. Yes. You can find the rest of our podcast and Rapture Press alongside many other podcasts, all kinds of comic books and movie news and all that good stuff. Next week, I think it's time for discussions.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. All right.
I went to the movies twice in the last week. That's crazy.
There you go. We gave a brief preview of our Civil War thoughts in this episode, but maybe we'll go more in depth on that movie in our discussions episode next week. So yeah, look forward to that. And also The First Omen. We got to talk about The First Omen, baby.
Got to talk about The First Omen. What a picture.
Yeah, great movie. You like Possession? You like Rosemary's Baby? Go see The First Omen.
And not The First Omen. The First Omen.
Yes. I mean, watch the First Omen too. It's a pretty good movie, but
The First Omen too. I can't keep up.
Yeah, one of my favorite things about somebody pointed this out on Twitter, and I forget who, but somebody pointed this out on Twitter. One of my favorite things about, there's this moment in The First Omen that is a direct homage to a scene in Possession where she's like kind of freaking out, flailing around and all that kind of stuff. And both about the same thing, about this baby that's growing inside her. And in Possession, it's a baby Sam Neill, like it's his baby that she's going to be giving birth to, right? In The First Omen, she's giving birth to Damien, you know, spoilers. I mean, it's called The First Omen. You got it. Sam Neill played Damien in The Omen 3.
Whoa. crazy. The movies are back.
The Sam Neill-iverse is alive and well in modern cinema.
Incredible.
So yeah, we'll be talking about that and more next week in discussions. In the meantime, The Complete Works returning very soon for season 4. We'll have a date on that one very shortly. And that is the end of this week's episode of Mike and Mike Go to the Movies. We will see you on the other side.
Don't forget to subscribe to The Complete Works feed.
Yes, do that too.
And then we'll see you on the other. That's the other side we're talking about.